Welcome to Productivity Mastery. Stoy here, a productivity and performance coach on a mission to help businesses and people get the most out of their time. On this podcast, I'll bring you exceptional performers and together unlock what it takes to perform at your highest level. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy this episode. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Productivity Mastery, episode 73. Another summer holiday episode, and today I have the pleasure to be here with a good friend of mine, my Danish brother, Simon Skipper, who's a multi-skilled talent, and he's one of these people that is always filling you with positive energy, always have some new wisdom to share. He's a photographer, he's a life coach, among other type of coaching he does, and he's just an adventure of life. So very, very happy to have you here, Simon. Simon is the right way to pronounce it, right?
I mean, I let it be up to people. I don't need to. I mean, I understand my name. It's lucky that it works in multiple languages. Thank you so much, Stoyan. Thank you for having me here. It's an honor to be with you again, and a pleasure as always. We always seem to have fun, whether it's doing workshops together or running around in the forests of Bulgaria or just making jokes or growing together. So yeah, thanks for bringing me on. You've had a lot of great profiles on your show, and I'm happy to be here.
It's really my pleasure, Simon. And why don't you share with the audience a little bit more about yourself, who are you, where did you come from, and basically why did you decide to embark on a journey of personal growth, which is also the path that connected us at some point?
Absolutely. Yes, I would love to. So I'm a photojournalist by trade. I'm educated in Denmark. We have an amazing school of photojournalism here. One of my friends and colleagues, he just won Press Photo of the Year. He's called Mads Nissen. And we just have a long tradition of really high quality storytelling, visual storytelling. And that is where I'm educated from. And I also went to the Art Academy in The Hague in Holland. And besides that, as you say, I've been on this personal growth journey almost half my life now. And it's even crazy to realize that, because you know, always we get lost in our tracks, or at least I do. You know, I sometimes look at something I wrote in a journal from like 2 years ago or something, and I'm like, whoa, I had those issues. Like, my problems have increased in quality by a million. So I'm also studying psychotherapy at the moment, which was something that kind of, in Danish you would say, like, it falls in your turban, or like, you know, something kind of just falls in your head. So it's something that came to me, and even my meeting with you was a bit the same. I guess I just happened to live in this kind of serendipity sometimes. So I got an education as a coach a few years ago, and now I'm studying psychotherapy in a school called Immographics, which is an amazing new school. We know the founder, Niklas, both of us. And how I got into this whole personal journey, I kind of feel like I didn't have any choice. I've always been curious. I've always been sensitive, and I had a pretty rough childhood. And it actually took me some time to understand that, because the way I would understand like rough childhood would be like, okay, someone is beating you up, or you know, you have like some kind of deep trauma or abuse, and that really didn't really happen to me. I was just not seen. Like, I had to grow up very, very early in my life, like, you know, be a grown up and like learn to protect myself because I didn't feel safe. And the moment that it all really shifted for me was when I had probably the hardest relationship of my life in high school, and there was this lovely girl, and at the same time also you know, totally out of balance. And I kind of made it my job to put her in balance. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, and the listeners know, like, we can't really carry someone else on our back for very long. So I got out of that relationship and I had absolutely no idea who I was. And I was 19 years old, 18 years old. So I went to the library. I just got, like, all books in, like, the personal growth, self-development category. And I just, like, filled my backpack. And that's where it all started. And yeah, I'm happy and I'm blessed that also, I, you know, my family is quite open for spirituality and personal growth. So that's how it started. And my photography started with my passion for skateboarding, which has been with me since I was 10, and brought me also all, both photography and skateboarding has brought me onto adventures to about 60 countries in the world. So it's quite amazing. I have a lot I can share. That's like the short intro.
Thank you, Simon, for the intro. And by the way, Katrina, our mutual friend and a former guest at the podcast, is saying hello. Hi, Katrina. Oh, great to see you. And I would like to remind the listeners who are watching live that you got a chance now to post your question to Simon related to personal development, related to photography and storytelling, or anything else you want to ask. Make sure to post your question in a comment and we'll try to take some questions. Simon, I'm curious, what is your take on it? Do we have to go through a certain amount of pain in order for us to take a decision, I gotta change?
It's a great question. And I think the answer is both yes and no. There are two ways to... there's this Japanese principle. Let me see if I remember what is exactly it's called. But it's like there are two ways to learn. One is from pain and the other is from revelations, like epiphanies. And I don't remember the Japanese wording for it. But one is Satori and the other is maybe Kensho. So maybe I remember anyway. And I think Satori is the one for pain. But anyway, everybody can look that up. So we can... there is a like we can learn from sudden enlightenment. I mean, I'm sure most of us have tried, you know, maybe we're standing in the shower or we're on holidays and we're actually a bit bored, or, you know, suddenly something comes to us. But I think what's more often the case is that we go through a certain amount of pain and then we have enough. Like, and I can talk a lot about that as well. Like, you know, you see a lot of people, we live in a culture where it's so cheap to, like, pull the card for sympathy and or like blame others or feel sorry for ourselves. Like, it's so easy to be a victim. And the thing is, like, it doesn't really, it can bring sympathy, but it doesn't really bring growth. So it's like an excuse for the love and connection and growth that we're really yearning for. So what I see is also that, you know, when we have enough, like maybe, you know, it can be that it could be you're a smoker, your father is a smoker, and suddenly he passes away from smoking. Or it can be, you know, like we just have enough. And then you're like, that's it. I've reached my boundaries. I've had it. Not again, like not another shitty relationship, not another, you know, a terrible boss, not, it could be whatever, no more overweight. Because the thing is, and you know that as well, like we have to really commit to something. We can't just go around and talk about it. Like, yeah, I would like to quit smoking. I would like to lose weight. Like, talk is cheap, man.
I just want to say, Simon, I want to give you credit here because I know you now for a number of years, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is apart from knowing your expertise and that you give a lot, is the fact that you're not this guy that people cannot relate to, like, you know, oh, you had this terrible, like, you're coming from the war, blah blah blah, which is important, but you're just a normal guy, right, who committed. I don't want to settle for average. There was a point in your life that you said, hey, that's it. I want to be better. And you really live it. You really committed every single day to do something that in some way you learn something, you establish a new habit, you do something else. And I think a lot of the listeners can relate to this. A lot of the listeners are searching, just like we are. And I think this pandemic has been a very interesting time in that perspective that gave the opportunity for many people to take a pause and to say, where am I going?
Absolutely. And the pandemic has brought, I mean, first of all, I want to, you know, send out my love and my compassion for anyone who has lost someone to the pandemic or who has, you know, been really sick. And I mean, you can have a lot of opinions about something like this, but we have to acknowledge that it's a really tough time and some people have lost their loved ones. But apart from that, I see that, you know, there's a gift in everything. And you know, sometimes like the gift might be wrapped like in, you know, in barbed wire or something, and you have to like unwrap it. I mean, I'm a visual guy. I always use metaphors. But you know, then once you like, you unpack it and you realize, wow, okay, I was like, I lost my job to the pandemic, but now I see that I'm actually safe, or now that I like, that was actually not even what I wanted. Like, I have so many friends who are just waking up like these over these past 2 years. And I mean, especially when you live in Europe, when you live in like in a country with a certain amount of welfare, I mean, Denmark for sure is, you know, a pretty easy place to feel lost, even if it's never nice to feel lost in that way, because you're safe. And as one of my own spiritual teachers said, like, when I was struggling with my finances during COVID, she was like, well, you can always remind yourself that you live, you know, in a country where you're never going to be homeless. You're never going to be losing or missing the food that you're maybe telling yourself, you know. So our fears are often totally out of perspective to the reality that we live in. But yeah, a lot of awakening in these times.
You actually mentioned one of my teachers. I'm curious, and I'm sure many of the people listening could be curious to hear some of the experiences that you went through. You mentioned the coaching academy. I know that you're part of the whole Tony Robbins community and events. You joined Samudiva, and I'm sure there were some other workshops, experiences that you went through. Could you maybe share with the audience some of the highlights? What were some of the most impactful personal development events, and why was that the case?
Yeah, great question, and a subject that I love to talk about. The first one I want to bring up is actually Vipassana, which is a 10-day silent meditation retreat, which is fucking hard. Pardon my swearing. I hope it's all right. You get to sit. Well, first off, it's for free, and it's donation based, so your ego is out of the way. You can't complain about the food, the location, anything. And it's an ancient meditation practice that apparently should have been brought, it's in original form, for 2,500 years from the Buddha himself. And now it's being practiced all around the world. And basically you just sit for 10 days. You're not allowed to have eye contact with anyone except for the last day, where you can also speak a bit. So 10 days, you're without stimulation in a confined space, just with you and your mind. And meditating from like 4:30 in the morning and for 12 hours every day. It's insane. And I've been to a lot of different events, and I would like to emphasize also a few other ones. But the thing with this one is, first off, it's for free and it's accessible for everyone. And what I got out of it was also realizing, hey, like, the one that is cultivating all this growth is me. Like, I am the solution, right? Because often we look to a guru, or we look to a savior, we look to, and then we're like, oh, I'm gonna be the new Tony Robbins, or like, I'm gonna be the new Stoyan Yankov, or, you know, like, you know, people, they look to gurus or teachers and give away their power in that sense. And I'm not saying that, you know, teachers and gurus cannot help you, but the thing about Vipassana was that I realized, yeah, I learned some things here, but I was the one that did this, created this change. And I came out of it with the main principle they teach there is equanimity, which basically means like you are able to keep your mind and your emotions in a neutral space without clinging to anything and without aversion to anything. And that's where all suffering comes from. So I would recommend everyone to check that out. And I'm sure you can find also a 3-day version if you think 10 days is a bit intense at first. But it's crazy. Like, crazy things are coming up. Like, I was crying thinking about, you know, all the people that I love are going to die, and like all kinds of weird suppressed sexual fantasies I'm not going to elaborate on, like, came up, you know, like all kinds of things that we spend so much time trying to escape. Like, we're stimulating ourselves with phones, with food, with alcohol, whatever. And in such a space, you can't do that. Like, you're not even allowed to bring your phone. You're not really allowed to journal. You're not even meant to write anything down, like just being with your mind. So that is one thing that really, really has impacted me. And another one was, I mean, I've been to all these amazing Tony Robbins seminars, and I would also recommend everyone, like, he's one of the, like, he basically invented coaching, right? It's a bit American in some sense, but that's, again, that's the wrapping. And I would say once you go there, you feel like it's very powerful, and it's very holistic in the sense that, you know, he spent so many years perfecting all kinds of different areas, and it's so much fun. People are jumping around, dancing. I played like air guitar in a pile of people. I also managed to get on stage at one point and walk on fire, and, you know, crazy, crazy things. But another thing I want to bring up from actually another retreat I was on recently, which was called Men, you know, 2 or 21, which was like just Man 21 here in Denmark, a men's gathering. I went there. I was headhunted for, like, asked for it to join as a photographer and as a participant. And it was about a month ago, we were about 150, 140 men all showing up just to work with ourselves from 20 to 80 years old. And just, I mean, I can also talk, we can go more in depth with that, but like being a man these days, like the masculine archetypes and stereotypes and everything is kind of smothering with, like, with Me Too and with, you know, all these old patriarchal things in society that are shifting. You know, we're moving more a bit into the feminine or into, like, feeling and not versus so much just doing, which has been for the past centuries, I think. So just being there, for me, it was a huge revelation, because I realized, as I also mentioned earlier in our talk here, it's like I realized how far I've actually come in my own growth. And not to say that I'm anywhere near the goal, but I've been so busy earlier in my life judging myself or not feeling good enough. And, like, I'm sure, you know, everybody listening can relate to that. Like, we do that. We always, we tend to look for the flaws. And, you know, I was there and we made one exercise where everybody stood in a circle by age. So, like, from youngest to oldest. And, like, I was in the 10 youngest people. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And I could just see when I was speaking with people, like, yeah, I resonate with your challenges and problems. And at the same time, hey, I kind of dealt with that. Like, my relationship is actually working out, and we're actually able to, you know, my fiance, Ella, like, she's lovely, right? We're able to talk through everything. We can talk through our issues from the most vulnerable things.
I'm just gonna stop you for a second, because we are speaking about that. She's actually speaking about everything. She's just commenting a little clarification. You have to compete 10-day Vipassana first to attend the 3-day courses, which is a proof that this thing is like, hey, let's say things as they are. Anyway, go ahead, Simon.
Thank you, my love. So I was also meaning that you can find different things that are silent retreats, like not necessarily Vipassana, but then some other one. But yeah, that was like a few highlights.
And speaking about that, I'll be curious to ask you, what would be the three first most impactful or most memorable exercises? Like, you mentioned this circle that you're, like, what would be three really, really, for you, transformative exercises that you discovered in your journey attending these type of events?
Great question. So one is, it's very simple, and it is in all, in almost all such events. And I think it just basically comes from authentic relating or circling. And it's basically just, you know, setting up the frame with somebody that you get to speak for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes about what is active in you right now. So it's not so much like, who are you and what's, you know, like, how is your boss, like, has been bothering you for 10 years or something. It's more like, yeah, I feel guilty that I'm not a better father and I wish to be like that, and like to be met in that space. Like we don't find, unless we cultivate such relationships in our life, it's very hard to, well, few people really, I believe, have that amount of presence in their life. And many people, when they are speaking, you know, listening to somebody, they're just waiting for their turn to speak. And I think it's so sad, because we really, we all need to be seen and to feel like we matter and to feel like, you know, that we can be understood or at least respected. So just that exercise is so, so powerful, and it's also very vulnerable, and it's very easy to do, right? And another one, we did one when we did the Samudiva retreat, where we put, it was just the one that came to me now, it's like with the mask. So you write on the outside, you have a mask, right? Like a from a theater or something. And you write on the outside, this is how I want the world to see me. And on the inside, you're like, these are all the things I don't want the world to see, if I'm correct, right? And I mean, honesty can be painful, but it's also the path that sets you free. Like, we have to acknowledge those parts of us, and we're all humans. And I mean, the thing about doing something like that in a group is also you realize like, wow, I feel insecure about my body, or I feel like I don't want to be arrogant or something. And then you find out like, okay, 1/3 of the other people wrote exactly the same. So, you know, maybe there's nothing wrong with me. Maybe this is just like a human condition. Yeah. A third one. What would be a third one? I mean, I've done a lot of I can talk a little bit about, like, I've worked a lot with plant medicine. So I've done a lot of psilocybin mushrooms and different things, ayahuasca and such things. And it's a bit controversial in some places, but I can also see that it's, you know, it's really emerging in these times. And it's not for everybody, absolutely not. It's only for, you know, someone that feels like they're being called to do that kind of work, and you have to do it, you know, in a good setting and with, like, in a therapeutic sense, you know, with competent people that can help you. But I mean, I've went to some ceremonies several times, and I don't even know if I need to emphasize one, but just the fact of, like, we always have this illusion of control in our lives. Like, we need to feel safe and to control our lives, whereas at the end of the day, we don't really control anything. We control maybe our attitude but to what's happening to us, but we don't really control anything in our life, not ultimately, right? You could step out of your door and be hit by a bus or something. So like, handing over that illusion of control to something greater than myself, or like, just allowing myself to surrender, like, to let go and be in that space. And the thing is, what happens also with this plant medicine is, you know, your brain, it has two different ways to operate. And it goes way more into the parasympathetic nervous system as well. So it's like, I forgot what those two ways are called right now, but it's like, it goes to the more creative, more generative energy, you know, and your brain makes completely different connections, and suddenly you can see, hey, like, why do I care so much about what other people think about me? It doesn't even really matter. And like, some of those revelations can also come through therapy or self-inquiry, right? But psychedelics and plant medicine has helped me in that way a lot.
Talk to me about control and what you just shared. How do we surrender and let go of control, having in mind that we still need to have goals, we still need to have direction and focus? We're going to talk about focus in a bit as well, but how do we find the balance between you let go, but you still have a direction, you still have intention and goals to follow?
Absolutely. That's a great question too, because I'm not suggesting that we just drift around in life and not have any preferences, right? That's impossible. And I mean, I see it a lot as like, it's like being in a boat, right? It's like being in a ship and you can't control the sea, but you can control the sails. So that's for me a good way to look at it. And the first teacher and author I've actually found that I recently rediscovered, he's called Michael Singer. I don't know if you know him, but he wrote The Untethered Soul and the Surrender Experiment, a few other ones. He was also working together with Tony Robbins and some other great teachers out there. And what he says, he's great to check out when it comes to letting go and surrender. What he says is basically, so we live in a world for all we know, it's been almost 14 billion years in the making. And we are here just for a tiny fraction of a second of that time. And still we think we know better than existence or God or the universe or Allah, whatever you want to call it, right? So still we're like, it shouldn't be raining today, or she shouldn't have said that, or, you know, that shouldn't have happened. And basically all what we're doing when we decide that things shouldn't have been how they were is create suffering and create resistance, because obviously they happened as they happened. So probably that was how it was meant to go. And that also ties back to, you know, what we're talking about as pain as the teacher. So letting go comes down to me a lot to having faith and working on my trust in myself, in nature, in life. I mean, reminding myself, it doesn't even matter how spiritual someone are, you can always find faith in yourself. It's you know, well, I made it until this point. I've been through some crazy challenges that I wouldn't, you know, wish for my worst enemy. I don't have many enemies, but you get the point. And I'm still here, so probably I'm able to deal with what's coming my way. And also someone told me once that, you know, if a problem comes to you in life, it's probably because you're ready to deal with it. I like to look at it that way. At least that's what I'm telling myself. It's a nice attitude. And so, yeah, again, like having the goals is having the direction, having the vision is more like your compass. And then you allow life to guide you. And it's really how I'm actually living, and I'm seeing it more and more. And it's even, that's the way that you and I met. Like our common friend Dieter, she called me up and she's like, hey, I heard about this amazing retreat and my friend Stoyan is doing it. And it's like, it's in 2 weeks and I think it would be amazing for you. And I was pretty overwhelmed, but I thought, well, how often do I get a phone call like that? So I went and here we are, right?
But boy, was it amazing, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And talking about this, man, I have this concept which is very similar, which is you got to be outcome focused and also have freedom of outcome. Right? Outcome focus, outcome free. So you have the intention where you want to go. And one of my first speaking mentors, as you know, is Janet Atwood, the creator of The Passion Test, the serial best-selling author, one of the best ladies out there in the personal development world. And she told me the formula of The Passion Test, which I think beautifully describes what we are discussing right now, is intention, attention, no tension. Anything you do, you first want to be clear what's your intentions. What is the direction I want to be in? What are the goals? What are the passions that are really firing me up in your business? What are the goals? What are the milestones? What are the KPIs? Really, really important to know, to have clarity about where are you going? And then the second part is attention. You can't just sit on a couch and expect that the goals are going to get done. No, that's not how it works in the most cases. You got to get things done. You got to move. You got to try things, call people, make movements. And then the last part, which you're describing, is a part of surrender. No tension. As long as I'm clear, as long as I take action, I can't control it all. But the moment I let go, and you mentioned fate, have faith that it's going to work out somehow. And if it doesn't, This is because this is the best thing that could happen for me, for my journey, for the next step, for like maybe this is a lesson, like whatever, right? And when you really tap into this kind of mindset, magic, weirdly things start to happen. And maybe you have some stories
absolutely
as well.
Absolutely. I'm so happy you brought it up. I was like really sitting on my edge of my chair to not cut you off and interrupt. So several things. I'm happy you bring it up because I can see that I managed to live in that way quite regularly. And what I'm practicing is like to be an instrument for life, to play its music on, right? Or like a channel, or you know, you can say it in any way you want, but it also ties into creativity. Like where does that come from, right? I know when I make photographs and photo stories that I really, really treasure, when I come home and like I look at them on my computer screen, I'm like, I can't even believe that I made it. Like, I can't believe that I was the one that created that. And it even can be the same in a coaching and therapy session where I'm like, I don't know where those insights are coming from. It's just, you know, allowing ourselves to get out of the way and make some space on the inside for something better to arrive. And that comes down to that trust and faith as well. Like we have to have the space for receiving the things we ask for. And I see a lot of people, you know, they want something, but it comes from the energy of lack, or it comes from energy of mistrust or obligation. Like I have to do all these things. And I mean, it doesn't matter if you believe in karma or not, it's science. Like what you put out comes back to you, like in one form or another. It's like action and an equal and opposite reaction, right? So it's just physics. So I'm really focusing on the energy myself. And like, it's fine to be nervous. It's fine to have to overcome some fear. And that's also where, you know, if we really want to be serious and take ourselves seriously, which is something I can see that I have been good at in my life, taking myself and my growth very seriously, it's like what you can do is like commit with somebody, you know, like take a friend who you really respect and be like, make sure I do this. Or like if you see me with a cigarette, like, I don't know, like I'll give you my car. Because why not? Like if you're serious about stopping smoking, just create a super, super terrible consequence for yourself. Because if you're not willing to do that, you're not, your intention is not to stop doing that thing or change anything, right? You have to be willing to go that mile, extra mile. And I feel like I've been the same. Like I've had to borrow money to go on like on Tony Robbins Mastery University because I had promised myself I was gonna go. And did I feel comfortable in that moment? Oh no, but I knew it was the right thing. And it, like, I could feel it came from the right energy. And this was also something I wanted to bring up. It's like when we're looking at what we want in life, it's very important that we spend the time to question our why and our intention, our purpose, right? It's like, do I want this to like make my parents happy? Do I want it to fit into society? Or is it because it truly nourishes my soul and I will be able to, you know, give back to the people that I care about? Yeah.
I love it, man. And I want you to bring me a little bit into your world. There's many people listening who are coming from, you know, being entrepreneurs, freelancers, ambitious business people here. And obviously, in order to be productive, you need to create space and conditions for creativity to happen. And I'm curious, how do you tap into your creative flow? You're an award-winning photographer, and I do believe that the things that you can share with the audience can be applied in other industries, other businesses as well. But is there any certain things you do in order to get into your best creative state? Like if you think about the best photographies, the best videos, the best creative works you've done, what were some of the ingredients to put you into the state to be able to create these works?
That's a great question, and I'll be happy to reflect on that some more. What really is the most important for me to be in that creative state is again it comes down to surrendering, so to not being like I need this one outcome or like to be stressed. Like there has to be space. I can't be I can't be like, okay, I have to make this, I have to make a photo book and it has to be done in 1 week and it has to be fucking amazing. It's more like, you know, making the space, being just being present, just being open and really being present, because I mean, all that ultimately exists is the present moment, right? And then what I do with, I tap into my values, I tap into my creativity, well, my curiosity, I mean, which I'm super, super curious. So I find something that matters to me, or it can even be something that triggers me where I'm like, you know, is that really true? Or, you know, like trying to understand, you know, why could someone in Denmark, for example, want to send all the Syrians home, like the Syrian immigrants, like, but not coming from a place of judgment, even if I have my own personal opinions, like also something as a photojournalist and someone, you know, telling a story from a more objective point of view, I can't allow my own judgments and prejudice to get in the way. So I have to go for understanding somebody and understanding something. And another thing that can help me be creative is to put some kind of a obstacle or like a dogma. I mean, like we have those dogma movies from Denmark, like Lars von Trier and something like that. People probably are familiar. Something that what he did was, it's similar to what I do sometimes. It's like set up some kind of rule. Be like, okay, I cannot map out this project on my computer. I will use a whiteboard with 10 different colors, or I don't know. I will bring my kids and I will ask them about it, and they don't know anything about entrepreneurship, but that's exactly why they will help me. So it's like, you know, you kind of like mix the flow somehow or go somewhere new. Yeah.
You know, I love what you just said. And for me, it works pretty much the same. And those of you who are listening, and sometimes you might get, especially the entrepreneurs, you might get too much into your left brain of, I have to figure it out rationally and solve it. And if you get stuck, one of the best things you can do is just to do something completely different. And I want to here just share the main concept of another guest of the podcast, previous guest, Natalie Nixon, who's the author of award-winning book called The Creativity Leap, and she's a PhD in these areas. The main concept of the book is around finding your balance between wonder and rigor. All right, creativity works where in a rigorous structure, you can be wondrous. I think it's a really beautiful metaphor. How do I find my balance between having some kind of creative limitations, knowing what's the outcome, that, but at the same time having the freedom to be wondrous? And another amazing guest talking about this is Ilma Nausedaitil, who's the chief operational officer and co-founder of MailerLite, over 100 people company started in Lithuania. What they realized and what she realized is creativity happens when we do something different. So they invested into this sort of a routine that they have in the company. Every single employee is allowed to take a day off, but it's not a day off. They call it creativity days. So every quarter, you can do something completely different. Go to an art museum, visit some crazy theater, go and have a drawing workshop. Whatever it is, the only condition is you got to post it in the Slack group. And she's like, this is such a great investment in our own people's creativity, because when you do something different, then sometimes you use your hands if you're always working with your brain, you create some kind of a neural patterns and you start seeing things differently and be better in problem solving and coming up with solutions. So I love that you're saying, you know, do something different. And I don't know if you want to elaborate on that as well as a creative person. I'd love to hear what else you have to share.
Yeah, I love what you said also. The beautiful example. I got to listen to those episodes. It's all about doing something different, and it's all about getting out of our heads and into our bodies. And like, it can be scary, it can be vulnerable, it can be like, you can have some creative blocks, but like just, you know, take yourself a bit less seriously and just have fun. Like just, I mean, look at children, like go to a playground and look at kids, like don't look creepy, but you know, just like for inspiration, or just hang out if you have some kids, like, because they're just, they haven't messed up that natural creative flow that we all have. It, somebody telling me I'm not creative, it's like that's BS. Like, of course you are, you just shut off the, you know, you don't feel it because you're too much in your head. Like, you know, go to dance classes, like go, I don't, it doesn't even matter, like do nude drawings, like anything, or learn, pick up an instrument. Like I've also come from a very creative family, so maybe it's come to me more naturally. But again, like when we have one kind of creative discipline and then kind of can integrate that into our other processes, that's another way to do it. And also asking intelligent questions, right? Or imagining, like I was listening to this podcast from a very successful Danish startup called Sinful, and they are making sex toys, which is some overlooked industry in entrepreneurship. But the thing is they're doing it from a very sober and like holistic or more like feminine approach. The thing is the founder, she was always imagining. She was always like, why are all the light switches boring and have the same color? Or like, why is the thing holding up the light bulb always ugly, even if you buy an expensive lamp? So it's like, you know, create that space in your life to wonder and to ask questions and to be like, why do I have to do everything the same way as everybody else? Or like, you know, maybe, you know, you have to flip around the concept of what you're trying to create completely. Like that's how some of the best inventions are made.
Absolutely, man. And this morning I was listening to a great audiobook called Effortless by Greg McKeown, who's the author of Essentialism, one of my favorite books on productivity. And one of the concepts he shares in the book is adopting the zero draft approach, meaning, let's say you have to write a book and you have this creativity block, or like it just doesn't work out because you want to make it perfect, right? You want to write this perfect page. And he says, just write. This page is never going to make it anywhere. Just write whatever comes to mind, put words, sentences, and let it be. And I think this is just one approach. I'm sure there's many, many approaches to this, but when you find a way to let go of the tension from what if it's not good enough, you start to play, you start to create. And this is why I love what Natalie Nixon says, which is find your place in between wonder and rigor. You do need some rigor. If you just wonder, you might never finish. And these are a lot of creative people. You are in the creative world, you know that. Deadlines, you want to have rigor. But within this rigor, you do want to be playful. You do want to say, hey, you know what? I know I'm in the middle of this thing, but I'm going to go for a walk in the park and play guitar. All right, okay. If that's something that's going to give you this little energy and boost of creativity, good. Give it a try. We don't have to be so rigid about how things should be done. This is the way, and step one, step two. No. I mean, have a plan, but write it with a pencil. That they say that, right? So have a structure, have a set of desired outcomes, but then also allow yourself to find things on the way. So how do you, Simon, how do you define your direction? Let's talk about rigor a little bit. How do you set goals and define the direction? I know you're a very productive guy, but you're also occupied with a number of different endeavors, I would say, in different areas, right? Like you do photography and then you do coaching. Like these are two different things, just two of the things you do. How do you define your focus and what's most important for you at the moment?
So how I do it is I've spent a lot of time cultivating this, because as you say, a lot of creative people fall under the curse of like being afraid of structure or being afraid of like that more like masculine energy of like, you know, committing and going through with those projects and so on. But the thing is also, if you want to get somewhere with what you're doing, you need that framework. You need the aquarium where you can kind of swim around in, right? You need to have a solid structure of that. So I use accountability a lot. I work with a great coach who is keeping me accountable and doesn't buy my excuses. And then, so I've defined the different areas of my life that I want outcomes in.
How did you do that? Like, I'm sure many people listening now are curious, like, what is the process that you've been using successfully?
So for defining the different outcomes of my, the different areas of my life and the outcomes, it's like, there are a lot of things from Tony Robbins and for sure also others, but it's like, I've just looked at, okay, so what are the main areas of my life that matter to me? So there is my health, of course, because without my health, nothing else will matter. So for sure, I got exercise, eat healthy, emotional health, spiritual health, all of that. And then my relationships, like, so, you know, defining all the areas, finances, love, fun and recreation, career. It can be, you can make up your own areas. But if you look up, for example, Wheel of Life, that's for free. There are a lot of things, and that's from Tony Robbins. So then when you have the areas set up, then you want to work on goal setting, right? So then you want to be like, okay, what would bring me so much fulfillment in these different areas? And look at, okay, so is this like something I would like to achieve this year, or is it more like 10 years in the future? And is this really what I really want? Like, you always have what I feel like not everybody talking about goal setting is saying is like, is this like ecological, or like, you know, is this, how would this impact my life? Like, if I want to be the top one Iron Man or Iron Woman, like, okay, in the world, like, and can I still then have the best relationship in the world? Well, maybe, but it might be a bit tricky, right? So you always want to look at the different balance and then prioritize. And then it's about, you know, making sure that you're consistent, you know, like the power of marginal gains. Like, this is another beautiful principle that, you know, it's better to get 1% better every day than to, you know, work out 10 hours at once and then not do anything for a month. If anybody's even able to do that, I don't know. So those were a few of the principles. Like, you know, you have to have the clarity of vision. Like, know what you want, make sure that it's compelling. Like, what I see that a mistake I have done in the past and a lot of people are doing is like you're not lazy, you just have impotent goals, you know, like you, the thing, you haven't found what you really want. Like, for me, you know, I want to be able to take my family, my parents for vacation and like go skydiving with them. You know, I want to build a skate park in my hometown outside of Aarhus in Denmark where I learned to skate. Like, I want to give back, you know, a lot. If you want bigger goals, just take, or if you want something that's really pulling you, then look into contribution. Look into like, who do you want to make a difference for? Because that's something that's going to motivate you. I really can see that something shifting for me in recent years. It's less about me and more about, you know, who do I want to impact?
I love it, man. We have a number of comments, and I'm going to read you a comment and then ask you a question from the audience. Thank you guys for being active and interacting with us. That's really beautiful. Dmitry Sarli is texting us, great discussion, gentlemen. Fortunately, I got to go to a mentoring session, but would love to chat with both of you at some point. That's very interested in the same topics and discussions. Dmitry, it's going to be great to jump on a chat sometime. So, yeah, let us know. And then Daria, who's an ambitious and smart young lady, is saying, thank you for the interesting insights, Simon. I'm curious if you think that you can push your creativity in a certain direction, be it musical, literature, etc., even if it doesn't come natural to you. Great question, Daria. Simon, the floor is yours.
Amazing question. Thank you for being here, Daria, and for asking your question. So I would like to address one thing, and that is you cannot push creativity. And when that is said, it's you can only pull it. It's like a bit like a rope. Like you cannot really push it, right? But what you can do is, like, I sense a bit from your message that, you know, that there is a lot of mental activity in this question. So I would be more like, what do I really enjoy doing? And, you know, if you really enjoy playing music, even if it doesn't come to you so easily, or you're a bit tone deaf or whatever, go for it. Like, just, you know, just go for it. I would say, you know, whatever it is, like, as long as it comes naturally, like, it shouldn't be because it would be hip or be cool to be a great poet if, you know, if it doesn't come from the heart. So it's like, if we're able to say, hey, I really love singing and I'm not even particularly good at it, but I really, really love it. I will keep going with it. I will take some singing lessons, and maybe I won't be making opera, but hey, I can perform with a guitar and do amazing stuff. Like, honestly, some of the best singer-songwriters, they don't even have the best possible voice, but what they're doing is super raw and authentic. So I hope that answers your question.
Do you think there's a lot of people that say, I'm just not creative. Do you think, Simon, everybody can be creative, or do you think there are certain people that just not naturally prone to it?
I believe everybody is creative. And if you say you're not creative, you just don't see it, or you don't allow yourself to play around. Like, I would say, I was also reflecting a bit on it this morning, like, what does creativity mean? And like, I feel like, you know, creativity is pleasure. It's like, it's doing something for the pleasure of doing it. And it's also being so much in love with life that you are like, oh, this world is amazing and it needs more color. It needs more song, you know, whatever is what is calling. So it's like, also, you know, I meet sometimes people who are, I don't know, let's say 25, and they're like, yeah, I wish I picked up an instrument when I was little. Like, I feel like just going and buying them a guitar right away, like, take it. Like, what are you talking about? It's not like, you can never get too old to learn to play music. Yeah, sure, maybe it takes a little bit longer than when you were 10 and your brain was super elastic and all that. Like, come on.
You're not going to be a Mozart tomorrow, but, like, you know, it's not an excuse, you know.
Exactly. That's something else I was thinking about earlier that I didn't say. Like, so often when we suffer in our lives and when we struggle, it's because we forget to enjoy the process. And we become very outcome oriented, and we maybe have all these goals and desires, but we don't enjoy the process. And frankly, I mean, an outcome is just like a tiny point on a line of life. So you better find a way, no matter what you're doing listening to this, to enjoy the process, because otherwise you're probably not going to enjoy the outcome for more than a second anyway.
No, I'm curious to hear now, Simon. Can you remember something that you were really bad at, something you really sucked at it, and then you turn it around and you became pretty decent, if not super, super good at it? You can share something.
That's a good question. I mean, well, even just like I've naturally been quite shy and reserved. And then when I became curious on people and on the world and on traveling and found a bit more support in myself, then I suddenly turned much more to a extrovert, or like ambivert, and like wanting to, you know, tell stories on a stage, or, you know, make fun of myself and make people laugh. And it's like, that's one example. And yeah, I mean, that's the biggest one I can come up with.
This is just a good confirmation for those of you listening that this is also what I believe in, is you probably do not have, not every one of us has a talent to be world-class in everything. Each of us have some certain talents, but everyone can become good at whatever you want. And it's all about experience. It's all about deciding, I'm going to play with it, I'm going to give it a try, and hopefully supporting it with an empowering story, which often we are very good in self-sabotaging ourselves, especially if we believe that I'm not good at, I'm just not good enough at. But I think everybody can be good at something. Not everybody, you know, no matter how much I play basketball, I think I'm pretty good, but no matter how much I play, I'm not going to be an NBA man. I just don't have the natural capability. Don't say never, but like, you know, there are certain things that just don't come to you. But I can be pretty good with effort, with exercise, with consistency. And if you look at to whatever world champion, usually you'll see these people have been doing this consistently for years and years and years. So consistency of execution is way better indicator for success as opposed to the natural talent. That's my perspective, at least.
Absolutely. And I would love to add to that I don't even really believe in talent. I believe in effort. And that's something that's not talked much about in society. Like, it comes down to a huge shift in mindset. And I would believe anyone, or I would recommend anyone to look up the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. And there is a woman called Carol Dweck that made an amazing book on this. And the thing is that, you know, if somebody is good at something, it's not a question of talent, it's a question of effort. And of course, you know, if you don't have legs, then you're probably not going to be in the NBA. I mean, then maybe you're going to be, you know, in a handy, like the Paralympics or something with a basketball instead. But that's just a tiny factor, like effort. It's all about effort. If you're not good enough at something, just, you know, put more effort into it.
Consistency of execution, man. So underutilized. And really the consistency, the setting the plan, showing up every day, doing the work, even if you don't feel like doing the work, and you can make it up and definitely succeed a lot. We have a great question coming, which is from Eva. Hello, Eva, once again. So she's asking, how about curiosity and courage of trying new things? Aren't those qualities the way to push your creativity in any direction, even if it doesn't come naturally?
That's a great question. Thanks, Eva. I think those quality, it is a way to, I mean, in that sense, it is to push yourself, or I'm not a fan of the word push, but I get the point, like stepping out of your comfort zone, even if part of you wants to stay there. And that's also an ability that can be cultivated, right? We like practice being uncomfortable. Like, that's really another guy that I followed, he has, called Leo, he has a blog called Zen Habits, and I love how he combines the Eastern philosophy with a Western way of life. And he says something, he had one newsletter, I saved it with a screenshot, and he was talking about, you know, you can set aside like 10 minutes every day to just force or commit yourself to do something uncomfortable, or even like 2 minutes, because it's like a muscle. And it is very true that, like, we need to have that courage to be uncomfortable. And I learned it through skateboarding, right? Like, fall on my ass like probably 100,000 times and get back up again. And, you know, I'm grateful because I can take that way, that resilience and that way of approaching things and apply it at everything I do.
I love that you're saying this thing, man. And observing and studying some of the best, most creative companies in the world. Myself, as you know, I'm also coming. My background is from movie production and video production. I was really, really passionate about it. And one of the big revelations for me was to understand that the most creative companies pay enormous attention into creating a culture where making mistakes, failing, and fucking up is actually embraced in a way. People should feel safe to come up with crazy and risky and what kind of ideas, because yes, maybe 90%, 70%, 40% of them will never use them. But if we don't allow this to happen, we'll be just too much into our comfort zone. But if we create a space, and a great example is Ed Catmull, the president and co-founder of Pixar Animation. I think now he's serving as the president of Disney Animation. In his book, Creativity Inc., exceptional book on the topic, he talks about all these years that they've been struggling and getting better at some point to create a culture where we get rid of all the obstacles that stay on the way of creativity. And some of them are the self-imposed ones that we are too quick to judge. We're too quick to judge the unfinished idea or product, not seeing the potential into its development. And for those of you who are business leaders, who have a company, entrepreneurs out there, this is my invitation to you. Create a space and try to, even if you see that something is not working well and some of your team comes and you know, shows you this idea and stuff, just don't criticize it yet. Not yet. Just give it some space. Be curious. Be observant. Ask them why they believe in this thing. Sometimes the best thing you can do is to allow your team to come up with their idea, to be really driven and passionate about it. Maybe you don't see it, but just give them the chance to try. Maybe they'll actually hit jackpot, or maybe they'll learn and say, this is not working. Good. This is great. They tried their best and they didn't work out. Now they know. They really have it in their body. So it's just, I think it's a very good point that you say, Simon, about there's a lot of mistakes everybody's going to do. And that's okay. As long as you really committed, you do your best, it's not just like I'm laying and I overslept and sorry I didn't come to the shoot. Like, no, that's not what we're talking about. Talk about you do your best and it just you miss. That's okay. That's fine. So
yeah, absolutely.
So final question, Simon, so we can kind of wrap up this inspiring episode. What are some of the books the courses that you would recommend, maybe podcasts, like what are the things that you recently have been inspired by, the first ones that come to mind that you can recommend to the audience?
Yeah, I would love to share what has been resonating with me recently. So one, I already mentioned Michael Singer, right? With his work, The Untethered Soul, he made that book. He made Surrender Experiment. That's a great one when it comes to, you know, practicing letting go. And then another thing that I'm really focused on is being authentic. And that there, I always love the work of Brené Brown. Like, she's made different amazing book. She also has an amazing TED Talk. I would maybe even just send people first, like, go watch her TED Talk. It's called The Power of Vulnerability. I think it's one of the most popular TED Talks ever. Then another of my spiritual teachers is Osho, the Indian guy, who he made a book on creativity. It's just called Creativity and has a subtitle, and it's like a more holistic approach to creativity. I like it. It's very thought-provoking the way that he works. And then let me think more, like in terms of creativity, like in terms of focus, you know, maybe we should talk a little bit more about focus. We didn't touch much on that. Then there is, you know, I would recommend anyone to look into the work of Tony Robbins. He has a course called The Time of Your Life, which it's an absolute must for anyone. Like, time is our most valuable resource. And both, I mean, for you, Stoyan, and everybody watching this, I really honor that you're showing up and you want to spend your time with us, because with me, because it's the only thing, you know, we don't get back in life. So that course is amazing.
That course is amazing. I agree.
Yeah, and The One Thing is another amazing book when it comes to focus. That one question that I brought it up when we were talking before we went live, right? Like, one question that comes from that book is, you know, what is the one thing I can do what is the one decision I can make that will eliminate the need to make any other decisions?
And by the way, the co-author Jay Papasan was a guest at the show, so those of you who are interested can go check it out. One of the highest rated episodes. Really, really exceptional. So go check it out, the episode with Jay Papasan.
Yes. So maybe we to honor the title of the episode, we should talk a little bit more about focus. Just a little.
Well, look, I think it's about time to kind of wrap up the episode, Simon. But right. Definitely,
well, I can give just one yes, tip that I do to say. Well, I will give two because I need to. But one is, you know, be accountable. Like, if you want to be focused about something, have someone help you be accountable. And the second thing is, like, eliminate distractions. Like, take back your attention. You know, like, remove notifications on your phone. Like, if you really want to work deeply on something, like, shut down everything that's not related to that. And even just half an hour of focused work can get you so far. If you're, like, we have to take back our attention. Like Jim Rohn, he said, we have to stand guard at the door of our mind, right, for what we let in. So that would be one major tip.
Especially for those of you who are into creative work, blocking time, as Simon says, is such an underutilized practice and strategy. Almost everybody knows about this concept of, let me block a specific amount of time to get one task done or one result done. Sounds easy, but you know, to make it really a practice and to have a discipline to say, hey, let me put a few time blocks this morning, this afternoon, to get something done, it can have an enormous effect on your productivity. Definitely highly recommended it to everybody. Give it a try, as with everything else. Experiment and see for a few days how is that going to affect your productivity. And let us know. Keep us posted. Simon, it's been such a pleasure having you. Where could people find you, get in touch, maybe hire you to do some photography for them, or if they're interested, get you on board as a coach, as somebody to guide them and to be on their side on their own journey of personal growth?
Absolutely. I would love to support anyone that where what I'm saying is resonating, right? I would love that. So you can find me in all over the internet at Simon Skipper Christensen. This is my website is simonskipper.com. It's relaunching tomorrow. So Friday the 30th of of July. So you can take it now, but also it will relaunch tomorrow. And until then, there's also my Instagram where I put all my photography. It's at official skips. And yeah, on LinkedIn, where you are now, I mean, most of you, Simon Skipper Christensen, the same on Facebook, Skipper Photography, my company. Feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Simon. And thanks to everybody for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and see you again at the next episode of Productivity Mastery. Until then, stay focused, enjoy your life, and we'll talk soon. Thank you guys for listening. And if you're looking for somebody to help you step up your team performers and boost your productivity, make sure to check out stoyanyankov.com for online workshop solutions and programs designed to help you go through the current situation in a smoother manner. Stay safe and keep moving forward.